Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark. She is the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul books. Amy and I will be discussing the latest book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, co-authored by her, titled Billy Graham and Me. It is a special anthology documenting the life and legacy of the world's best-known evangelist. The book contains 101 stories from world leaders, including every living president and the people who know the Reverend best. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great, Johnny. Thank you so much for having me on to talk about this book, which is a unique and very important book for us.
It is wonderful. I'm very excited to have you on the air. Billy Graham and Me is truly an awesome book. The unique approach to the book has added a new dimension to you guys as far as what your brand stands for. And the stories are beyond inspiring. I learned a lot from it. I cannot believe how one man's passion can really indeed impact so many lives in such a profound manner. So congratulations for that.
Thanks. I think he has impacted millions of people worldwide over many decades, I guess really tens of millions of people. So we're happy to document that in our own way.
Wonderful. Well, for those people who have not heard of you before, can you please give us a quick walkthrough of your life and how you ended up with Chicken Soup for the Soul?
Oh, sure. I actually didn't start out in the publishing business. I started out after graduating from Harvard. I discovered that I was very interested in telecommunications. So I started out working in the telecommunications industry as a consultant. And I went to Wall Street and I analyzed telecommunications stocks, and then I did some investment banking, and I had a hedge fund where I invested in telecommunications stocks and technology stocks. And then I actually joined the management team of an up-and-coming telecommunications company that grew very rapidly. And then I went on the boards of a lot of different telecommunications and technology stocks. So my life has been about business and technology and Wall Street. And about 5 years ago, my husband and I were looking for something new to do. We were both semi-retired. Mm-hmm. For me, it was the second time I had gone into retirement. And every time I try to retire, I seem to fail at that because I get bored. And so we ended up taking over the management of Chicken Soup for the Soul. Mm-hmm. We actually bought the company from Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, but they remain shareholders in the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we moved the company from Southern California to Southern Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And we are continuing on with the legacy of Jack and Mark, continuing to collect stories, usually from regular people from all walks of life, making mm-hmm. these inspirational books.
Mm-hmm.
And this Billy Graham book was actually something that was being talked about years ago, even around the time that we were taking over the management of the company.
Mm-hmm.
It was an idea that was percolating. And so we have spent years working on it, and I would say the last 2 years we were intensely working on it, along with Steve Posner, mm-hmm. who had the original idea to do this book. This was his dream, to do a Chicken Soup for the Soul book that was a tribute to Billy Graham. And Steve mm-hmm. Posner, who is a professor at UCLA, he is the one who actually went out and got all of these incredible people to contribute their stories. And then I helped to edit the book and shape
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful joint effort between Chicken Soup for the Soul and Steve Posner creating this book.
I can tell you the team effort is just tremendous because, for one, having Dr. Graham to be the main focus and yet you have other people talking about him is totally unique, and the book is a definite must read. I mean, I really, really enjoyed it. And I've told you this off the air, and I'm going to say it on the air. This is probably the best Chicken Soup for the Soul book I've read.
Well, let me tell you this. Every time I work on a book, it's my favorite while I'm working on it.
That's true.
So I will accept that comment from you, but I'm hoping the next time we talk about one of our books, you say that's the best one you've ever read, because every time I make one, it's my favorite. But this is a very special one, and we were actually so honored that Billy mm-hmm. Graham allowed us to make this book and mm-hmm. was excited about it
yeah.
and gave us all of the resources of his people, his personal spokesperson and publicist, Larry Ross, mm-hmm. helped us enormously and wrote a beautiful foreword for the book. The Billy Graham Evangelistic Association helped us a lot with the book. And in fact, the Billy Graham folks fact-checked every mm-hmm. single word in the book.
Wow.
Because we knew we were creating a document that was really going to be part of his legacy,
mm-hmm.
part of the historical record of Billy Graham. And so they did fact check everything. Because if people were talking about something that happened, say, 40 years ago, they might have gotten the date wrong. You know, memories would fail. And
right.
we were very right. happy that we got the whole thing fact checked, because that makes it not only inspiring, but also quite accurate.
Very interesting. Can you give us a quick history about Billy Graham? And the reason I'm asking you this, because he is an elderly gentleman now, and certainly for people, and I mentioned to you about the fact that I came to know about Billy Graham when I first came here to the United States in 1980, when I saw a few of his revivals on TV, but that was about it pretty much for me. And I'm sure the younger generations may have heard of him, but really does not know him as a person. And I think this is the best time to really tell the listeners really who Billy Graham is.
Well, he started out as an evangelical preacher, like many others, and he just caught on, and he always conducted himself with such integrity and was really a groundbreaker in terms of civil rights and tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he still stands out as a very tolerant evangelical preacher. And I'll give you two examples of that. One is that even back in the 1950s, when the South of the United States pretty much accepted the fact that there was segregation,
mm-hmm.
Billy Graham was very unusual among evangelical preachers, and he would not preach to an audience that was segregated. He insisted on having an integrated audience where blacks and whites sat together, and he would not speak otherwise. He also mm-hmm. embraced Martin Luther King Jr. very early, before he was even famous. He had
right.
Martin Luther King Jr. join him in New York for a series of crusades in 1957, very, very early.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's striking about him is that he's tolerant of people with other belief systems. So he still believes in his Christianity, and particularly the evangelical type of Christianity, but he's friendly with Jews, with Muslims, with Buddhists, with mm-hmm. Hindus. He's friendly with everybody, and he's very well respected for that. And I think as he's gotten older, he's actually become even more tolerant, which is
yeah.
unusual. Many
yeah.
people become less tolerant as they get older. So a lot of people in the book talk about his very high level of tolerance, and also his very brave and forward-thinking stance on being opposed to segregation.
Very interesting, and it's very true. I learned so much from the book about history, in terms of, you talk about Dr. King joining him in 1957 in the crusade he had in New York, and then, of course, him meeting with the Pope and so forth. And that was quite interesting, because these are not many things that people know. It brought me to the specific time in our history and events that were happening and how crucial they were, and yet he was there, and somehow he was able to help, if nothing else, tone things down and bring it down to reality. In the end, it's like we're all human beings. We're here to serve one God, and we're here to work with each other, and I thought that was wonderful.
I think that that is one of the reasons why he appeals to people. There's just a goodness that he exudes,
mm-hmm.
and people see that he's genuine, he's honest, He likes everybody. He's very open-minded. Mm-hmm. He has no ego at all. It's incredible how small his ego is. Joel Osteen, who, of course, is extremely famous.
Yeah, yeah.
He writes in his story that he and his wife went to North Carolina to meet Billy Graham at his home. People basically make pilgrimages to
right.
Montreat, North Carolina, to meet Billy Graham. And Joel Osteen said that Billy Graham kept saying to him, "Why are you here? You must have someone else you're seeing in North Carolina, so you're stopping by to see me
yeah.
because you were already
yeah.
here." And he couldn't comprehend that Joel Osteen
yeah.
and his wife would have made a trip just to meet with Billy Graham. He just doesn't realize how famous he is and how well-liked he is and how great the impact is that he has made. So that self-effacing person is so appealing to the world, and it really has enabled him over these decades
mm-hmm.
to spread his message so much more effectively, because basically the Billy Graham who you see in public is
yeah.
the real Billy Graham.
Like, right.
what you see is actually what you get, and that's what these stories say over and over again, that the behind-the-scenes Billy Graham is just as wonderful as the public image would lead you to believe.
Right. He truly set a very high standards for the world of evangelism. When did you first learn of Dr. Graham?
I always knew that he existed, but I grew up in a suburb of New York City, and I was born in 1957. And I don't think that Billy Graham was really a part of our lives, you
mm-hmm.
know, we Yankees. He was really more of a Southern phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, he did well in L.A. and he did well in New York, but he wasn't part of my life. I don't recall my parents ever turning on the television to watch him.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this was a great discovery, and that was one of the things that I think I brought to the book, was the fact that this was all new information for me, and I think that's good.
Yeah,
it's good
yeah.
to have an editor for whom this is a new experience, because
mm-hmm.
it meant that I didn't assume that the reader would know certain things.
Right.
And that makes the book very complete, because I looked at all of this with the same sense of wonder that many of our readers will have, and I would think especially readers who are under 40 years old. This is going
yeah.
to be very new information for them.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's true, and that's the reason why I wanted you to talk a little bit about his history, because I would think back then there was not as much coverage on the air as it is right now. Evangelist now gets lots of TV coverage, but back then what he was doing was basically you just show up where you need to be and let the Spirit move you.
Yeah, isn't it incredible? The degree of fame that he had back when
yeah.
there were, you know, two or three TV stations in each
yeah.
market. There was one newspaper, which always had old news in it. Imagine what he would have done with the power of the Internet, Twitter and Facebook and 500 TV channels and all, you know, streaming
yeah.
video and all the rest.
Yeah.
Of it. And he achieved the level of fame that he achieved without any of those tools. It's the level of fame that people are now trying to achieve with all those tools and not
right.
achieving. So you're right. It makes it even more remarkable that he was such a phenomenon even back in the 1950s, and it was very much done through word of mouth. And he would go into cities where he was expected to have very small audiences and end up seeing tens of thousands of people every
yeah.
night for,
yeah.
you know, 2 weeks in a row.
Right,
all
right.
All through word of mouth. The other interesting thing about him is, even though he is 94 years old now, and so you wouldn't think that a 94-year-old would embrace technology, he always had a very youthful outlook. And so he actually did cause his organization to embrace technology on the early side. And he also was really good about reaching out to the youth audience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even decades ago, he started having rock bands play at
mm-hmm.
revivals, and he really understood how to reach out to a younger audience, and that was another thing that made him unique. And there are so many people in the book who have talked about seeing him
right.
when they were just kids and how he was able to reach out to them even as children. He had a lot of wonderful rock performers and country right. music performers who would accompany him and reach out to that younger audience.
There are stories in the book about mom passing it to the son and the son now wanting to pass that legacy, so to speak, to the next generation, the third generation. And that's interesting. Coming back to when you talk about Joel Osteen giving his testimonial about Billy Graham, what's interesting is that Billy Graham was so humble in saying, well, you know, you're here to see me and you speak to a stadium full of people. And Joel Osteen's thinking on the back of his mind, but I'm learning from the best. You are the one who spoke
full of people. It's like Billy Graham forgets that, hey, yeah, he was the famous one. He's the guy who started it all.
He is
that humble. That was a word that was used a lot in the book was the word humility.
Yeah.
That this is a man with a lot of humility who just doesn't really understand what the fuss is about.
Right.
As far as he's concerned, he just got up and spoke and he doesn't really think he did anything special or that he is anybody special. He's just doing his job. So he really is an extraordinary guy. And you're right, he's had a multi-generational impact, and there are many families where the grandparents were young when he was super famous, and now you've got three generations later, he's still super famous.
Right.
So, yeah, and I think he's going to continue to have an impact for the years to come, because the wonderful thing now is that his sermons are they're capsulized for us. There are videos available, and you can watch movies that he has created, and you can go on the internet at any time that you want and watch him speak. And so he's always going to be available to people.
That's wonderful.
94 now, but he's still going strong. But we know that there will come the day when he won't be around, but I think that he really will live on through the videos, through the written work. His sermons have been written down. In fact, he gave us a sermon for the back of the book.
Yes. It's wonderful. It's truly amazing what he has done. In the course of conversation, this was some years back, and I was asked, you know, like, who do you think of what and so forth. And I mentioned his name, and of course, I hardly know him until I've read this book, that one of the things that I mentioned about, I said, Billy Graham is one of the people that I felt when you look at him and you look at his face, he's truly touched by God. And that was the end of what I had to say, because that's all I knew of him. And until I read this book, then I found there was a lot of similarities of all the people that have written about him in the book. And that brings me to, you have an impressive list of contributors to the book. So tell us a little bit about these contributors.
Well, we wanted to get a great cross-section of America. And there were so many people who had personal experiences with Billy Graham. Virtually all of these contributors have spent time with Billy Graham. Some of them have spent extensive time with him. Some of them had one or two meetings that really changed their lives. And we have every living U.S. president. We have leaders of other nations. For example, we have Tony Blair. We have Henry Kissinger. We have senators. We have congressmen. Then moving out of public service, we have numerous other big preachers, evangelical and otherwise. We also have leaders of other religions, other, you know, non-Christian religions. For example, we have Ella Gandhi, who is Mahatma Gandhi's granddaughter. We have numerous newscasters from both the liberal press and the conservative press. So we have Larry King, who's a huge admirer of Billy Graham, but then we have a group of newscasters from Fox News as well, representing the more conservative side. We have famous authors. We have artists. We have singers. We have actors. We run the gamut. We have Lou Zamperini. It's just an incredible group of people. And we also have Billy Graham's real inner circle. We have his doctor. We have the people who work with him on a daily basis. We also have some of his children, his grandchildren, his in-laws, nieces and nephews. We actually ended up turning away people at the end. We turned away.
Oh, wow.
We turned away really big names.
Yeah.
And it's not that we slavishly adhere to having 101 stories in each book, but the book was just getting too thick.
Yeah.
And so we had to stop at 101. So we did turn away some people. I apologize for that, but there was nothing we could do. I mean, the whole world wanted to be in this book.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's truly wonderful. You mentioned about every living president contributed to the book. How difficult was it to get them to contribute stories?
It wasn't that hard because Billy Graham has been a big part of the Oval Office for his whole life. Every one of these presidents has had personal interactions with him. Billy Graham was the preacher at the National Prayer Breakfast for decades, and his presence is still very important at the National Prayer Breakfast. I mean, that was really his event for many years. We have a fabulous picture in the photo section of the book of him in the Oval Office with Bill Clinton.
Yes.
But he has been so important to these presidents and such a wonderful guiding force for them, not only from a religious point of view, but also just as somebody who's wise and can mentor them and has a good perspective on the world and doesn't come to them with any political agenda.
No.
And if you think about a president, how many people can presidents go to who are world leaders, really have wisdom and perspective, and don't represent either the Republicans or the Democrats or any particular agenda?
Right.
And so every president felt that he was very valuable to them as a mentor and an advisor. So his career is very much intertwined with the White House. He's always been part of the White House.
One of the things that I've read, and this was written by George W. Bush, ironically, is a story about his dad, in a way, George H. Bush, and the thing that he pointed out about Christianity, the simple question of someone being a born-again Christian. And Billy Graham had the wonderful answer about saying that, well, some people require to be a born-again Christian, and some people are born a Christian.
That's right. He said, that's exactly true. And then I guess, as we all know, but W was born again.
But
his dad wasn't. And that was a good point that Billy Graham said. Some people need to do that and some people don't.
Yeah. It's just a unique perspective on he's able to understand that, because it's true. You do have, I would say, people that honestly feel like, well, unless you're born again, you're not a Christian. And that's not necessarily true, because being a Christian is how you live your life. And so there was a unique perspective from him, from someone who actually lives his life being a Christian. The other one that I thought was very interesting, and this is a part of history, was when President Carter asked him about North Korea. Apparently, Ruth had gone to high school in Pyongyang. And
yes.
I did not know that.
I know. Billy Graham was remarkably international, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, to have a wife who had lived in Asia, that was really something. She went to high school there for several years. And Billy Graham was a wonderful traveler. Besides being a world leader and a groundbreaker in requiring that his audiences be integrated, he was also a groundbreaker in that he was the first evangelist of any stature who penetrated the Iron Curtain. He went to Hungary in 1977, and he preached to hundreds of thousands of people. And that was when you weren't really supposed to be engaging in any religious activities
under
the communist government. And Jimmy Carter says in his story that the CIA told him what happened there. So, you know, he got the accurate numbers from the CIA, which was, you know, with great interest, watching Billy Graham get away with doing something religious behind the Iron Curtain. So he's always been very, very international, and he has preached all over the world. In the photo section, we do have photos of him preaching to, you know, tens of thousands of people in other countries. Yeah, he really is the world's preacher, not just the United States' favorite preacher, but really the world's favorite preacher. In fact, there's a picture of him preaching in Seoul, South Korea, in 1973. There were 1.1 million people at that one event.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I mean, you look at the picture, and it looks like The picture had to be taken with such a wide lens to show 1.1 million people that the picture actually shows the curvature of the Earth.
Yeah. I'm looking
that's
at it
how,
right now.
That's how big the picture had to be. It's pretty incredible. Yeah, and he was such an internationalist that Richard Nixon actually asked him if he would like to be the U.S. ambassador to Israel.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But he said, no, I want to keep doing my work. But
right.
That's how international he was, and also how respected he was by people of other religions. There's a story from Danny Ayalon,
mm-hmm.
who is the deputy foreign minister of Israel, and he was the former Israeli ambassador to the U.S., and he talks about how much Israelis like Billy Graham because he has never tried to proselytize them. He's always mm-hmm. respected that they have their own religion, and he's just talked about the commonality between mm-hmm. the Jewish and the Christian religions, because, of course, there are many, many things in common between the two religions.
Yeah.
And the Israelis really believe that that Billy Graham has done a lot for Israeli-American relations.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a great example of how an evangelical preacher can reach out to people of other faiths and be extremely popular.
Very, very true. Were there challenges in writing the book?
Yes, because first we had to get the whole concept approved by the Billy mm-hmm. Graham people. So mm-hmm. that took a while, but then they approved it wholeheartedly. Then we had to come up with our strategy, and then we had to figure out how to reach all of these famous people, many of whom are really hard to reach. So Steve mm-hmm. Posner and his wife, Mona, were instrumental in that, and they had to be detectives. And I mean, each person that was added to the book took a lot
yeah.
of detective work because
yeah.
you can't just reach them. You have to go through one handler who passes you to another
right,
handler
right.
to another handler. You have to make your case over and over again. Finally, it gets to the celebrity, and the celebrity
yeah.
says, oh, sure, I'd love to do that. But
mm-hmm.
you have to get there first. Then there's the matter of getting the story passed back down
right.
through everybody directly to you, although I do have a lot of emails now directly to these people, but they will
yeah.
remain secret, those email addresses. But it's a lot of work when you're dealing
yeah.
with such famous people. Often you have
yeah.
to go through agents and lawyers.
Right.
I spent a lot of time talking to lawyers and shaping the legal agreements for every story. It's not at all like taking stories from the general public. It's
right.
a much bigger deal. Every one of these contributors is a household name.
Right. You don't want to misquote them by accident.
No.
And,
so then
yeah.
every story, well, we do this with our regular contributors too, but after
right,
we've
right.
made our edits, the stories go back for the contributor to approve.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that involved a lot of work. So we were extremely careful to make sure that what we published was exactly what the contributors approved. And then, of course, there was that fact-checking that I mentioned to you that was done by the Billy Graham folks so that, the crusade that was mentioned in the story was listed as occurring during
right.
the right month and the right year, because I do think this is going to be part of the historic record of Billy Graham. So it was very important that it be accurate.
Mm-hmm. Well, it should be, because for this book, for the newer generation, and even like for me, from someone who basically did not grow up here but came here to go to college when I was 18, and having the opportunity to really see such a very important spiritual person, and as you had mentioned just now, the fact that he's someone that's well loved and respected, I think that's the most important thing. He does not necessarily throw the Bible at you, but just share the word of God, and I think that's a big difference.
Yeah, he's not aggressive about it.
Mm-hmm.
He's friendly, and he just says, here's what I believe,
mm-hmm.
let me tell you about it, and then he leaves it up to the person, what the person wants to do.
Precise.
And there were many people who talked about the fact that they went to crusades where he would say, feel free to come up to the front if you
mm-hmm.
want to accept Jesus into your life, and these people who
right.
thought they were going just as observers, even newscasters, would find themselves walking to the front.
Right.
Along
right.
with thousands of other people. So he, in a very understated, not aggressive, pleasant way, had the impact that he wanted. And, of course, that's really the way that you have a lasting impact, if you don't ram it down people's throats.
Right, right. And the best story about that is by Louis Zamperini.
Oh, yes.
That's just a wonderful, beautiful, beautiful story.
Yeah, now that, and you know what I love about this is that we have in the photo section of the book, we have a photo of Billy Graham with Louis Zamperini in 1949, and then we have another photo of them together in 2011, and that is just so great that we have those two photos. In fact, that was something that was really nice. The Billy Graham Foundation gave us access to all of these old photos, many of which are black and white because they were taken so long ago. And, I mean, what a treasure trove of photos we have in this book. I'm looking at the photo right now of Louis Zamperini with Billy Graham, the old one and then the new one.
And
of course, people know about Louis Zamperini's story because of him being the subject of the best-selling book Unbroken.
Right.
But Louis Zamperini does talk about how Billy Graham converted him. And by the way, this was a fresh story from Louis Zamperini that he gave to us, which was really great of him. So, and he's still, now he's kind of speaking for Billy Graham. Louis Zamperini recently spoke at the Billy Graham Library. So it's kind of funny that Billy Graham spoke to him. Decades ago, and now Lou Zamperini is speaking at the Billy Graham Library. It shows how things really turn around. And they're the same age. I think they're maybe 1 year apart.
Yeah, so, Louis is a year older, and he pointed that out, too.
So more than six decades passed since that first night that they met each other in 1949 when Billy Graham changed Lou Zamperini's life so dramatically. And they're still buddies. It's really incredible what the two of them have been through in all that time.
What are some of your favorite stories in the book?
I actually love Larry Ross's foreword, which was originally
very much, yes.
It was going to be a story, and then I said, you know, this is so incredible. I want this to be the foreword to the book because we hadn't chosen anyone to write the foreword, and I thought Larry Ross has known Billy Graham for decades. He works with him very, very closely because he is his spokesperson and his publicist, and not a publicist to create publicity for Billy Graham because he certainly doesn't need that, more just somebody to be an interface with the press. And he's been with Billy Graham for more than, I think it was more than two decades, and he has a great story about something that Billy Graham did for Bill Clinton, and that was that there was a Time magazine gala, and this was during the time in 1998 when Bill Clinton had just been impeached by the House of Representatives, and Joe DiMaggio was supposed to sit next to Bill Clinton, and he refused to sit next to the president at the head table. Which was a disaster for the Time magazine people. They couldn't have somebody refuse to sit next to Bill Clinton. What a terrible, unforgiving thing to do. And no other celebrity in attendance would sit next to him because nobody wanted to be photographed next to him in the middle of everything that was going on. And Billy Graham stepped right up and said, "I will sit next to the president. He's my friend." And that just shows how forgiving he is, how compassionate, and he saved the day and sat next to Bill Clinton. And I think that I loved that story about him. And these are little pieces of history we wouldn't know otherwise.
Right.
I mean,
right.
This is a book not only about a religious leader, but this is a way of looking at U.S. history through a different lens.
That's right. Very true. And what it is also, it is a book about relationships.
It is. It is, because these people do discuss these relationships. Now, another story that I really love is actually a story written by Anne Graham Lotz, who is Billy Graham's daughter. And she had a car accident. She wrecked the car. You know, she was 17. You know how 17-year-olds are. And they lived at the top of a really difficult road that had a hairpin curve in it. And she ended up almost hitting another car. I'm sure she was going too fast. She was 17. She smashed the side of her car. And then she had to go to an event at her school. It was her graduation. And she didn't want her dad to know, so she parked her car with the smash side against some bushes so nobody would see them, and she was trying to decide, what am I going to do? And then her father was the speaker at the graduation. So, I mean, this poor 17-year-old girl was just dying. She was just dying. This was not Billy Graham, the famous preacher. This was Billy Graham, the dad. And she was terrified about telling him. And she finally confessed to him that night. She said, Daddy, I'm so sorry. If you knew what I'd done, you never would have said all those nice things about me earlier today. And then she confessed to him about how she wrecked the car and how it was all her fault. And then he said to her the following things. Anne, I knew all along about your wreck. Mrs. Pickering came right up the mountain and told me. I was just waiting for you to tell me. So that whole day long when he was being nice to her, he knew. And then he said, I love you. He said, we can fix the car, and you are going to be a better driver because of this. And then she says that she really took this life lesson and applied it to life in general, that all of us are involved in a wreck at some time. It could be a physical wreck or an emotional or financial wreck or a relationship wreck. And the wreck can be your fault, but the important thing is not to run away from it and to realize that you'll be forgiven. And so that was a wonderful life lesson she learned from the man who was both her father and also the famous preacher. So I love that story because that shows Billy Graham the real person.
Right, right, very true. Can you tell us a little bit about the book charity aspects?
Oh, yeah. You know, we do a lot for charity at Chicken Soup for the Soul, and we often give money from the proceeds of our books to different charities. And in the case of this book, we're making a very large donation per book, the largest I've ever seen us make in our history, to the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, the BGEA. So every book is going to very much benefit Billy Graham's ministry worldwide. So we're excited about that. And we actually priced the book very low for a hardcover. It's $24.95, but there was still room in there for us to make this large charitable donation, which makes us feel really good because we certainly don't want to make a book about such a giving person without being involved in the giving ourselves. So we're happy to be doing that, but that's actually something we do all the time. We have a very large charity program where we let charities come to us and buy our books and at a very low price and then sell them themselves at their fundraisers and keep the profits for themselves. So we sell tens of thousands of books that way. It's important to us. We want to be part of people's fundraising. And we would never do a book like the Billy Graham book without making sure that it was a big contributor to charity.
Wonderful. That brings me back to the book itself, the construction of the book. This is a hardcover. It's very well designed and put together. And, of course, you have a wonderful, wonderful section in there with photos, wonderful photos. So tell us a little bit more about the construction itself and the way it's designed and so forth.
Thank you for asking about the appearance of the book, because we're very conscious of the appearance of our books at Chicken Soup for the Soul, and we wanted this Billy Graham and Me book to be very beautiful and very respectful of Billy Graham, but also show his friendliness and his accessibility. And we also realized that this book was going to live long after Billy Graham, and so we wanted the book to be respectful of the fact that it would be part of his legacy after he's gone. So it was a balancing act. What we ended up doing was, because the Billy Graham Foundation allowed us access to their photos, we were able to pick really incredible photos that people haven't seen before, or at least haven't seen in decades. And so what we did was, on the front of the book, we have a terrific photo of Billy Graham sitting in the grass, wearing jeans and a blue jean shirt, just sitting there cross-legged, enjoying nature and holding a Bible in his hand and looking so friendly and accessible. And we thought that was the right picture to put on the cover of the book. Mm-hmm. And then on the back of the book, we have a really big photo of Billy Graham many, many years ago as a young man, sitting in his library, surrounded by books, reading the Bible, looking very studious. And so you see him as a much younger man. And we actually took a quote from him and put it on that picture. The quote is, "I am not a great man, but I serve a great God." And we thought that was a fabulous quote for the back of the book. So there are two super photos on the book, on the cover of the book. And it's a really beautiful cover with embossing. It was a very expensive cover, but we went all out for Billy Graham. And then the photo section is actually double thick. Usually in books of this type, there's a 16-page photo section, and we actually went to a 32-page glossy full-color photo section. And we tried to give people a really good view of Billy Graham throughout history. So the first photo, oh my gosh, he is young. It's in the 1950s. He's at one of his Youth for Christ meetings. He looks like a rock star, or maybe like Buddy Holly or something. I think he looks like Buddy Holly in this picture. He really
does.
He's
a handsome guy. He's a very handsome
guy. He's very handsome guy. And then we move on through these key moments, the pictures with Lou Zamperini, picture with Martin Luther King Jr. And by the way, to publish pictures of Martin Luther King Jr., you need special permission from the Martin Luther King Jr. Foundation also, which we got. Then these incredible photos of Billy, the crowds that he attracted in New York. In New York City, a place where you wouldn't have expected him to be as popular. And then we have great shots of him with his five children and his beloved wife, Anne. And we have shots of the children when they were very little, and then we have shots very recently with the children. And we have shots in his home. We have shots of Billy Graham with world leaders, including the U.S. presidents, Queen Elizabeth, the Pope, and then we have some shots of him with his inner circle, such as his music director, Cliff Barrows, who has worked with him for most of his career and was instrumental. I don't mean to be punny when I say instrumental, but he was really important to making the Crusades a success because of the musical component of them that was especially important to the young people. We have a great picture of him with Larry King. We have pictures of him with performers, everyone from a hip-hop artist named Toby McKeon to, of course, our country music star, Charlie Daniels. So it's really a wonderful photo section. I've noticed that when people pick up the book, they're drawn to that photo section. One of my favorites is Billy Graham and Bill Clinton together in the Oval Office. And
I like
just
that
see,
very much.
Yeah, you can see the impact. It's a quiet moment, just the two of them, and you know he's counseling Bill Clinton, and it's just a lovely, lovely book. And then you see him with President Obama more recently. So I also think it's really cool that the last photo we have in the photo section is with Billy Graham's own pastor, Don Wilton. And of course, Billy Graham needs his own pastor, and we have a story from Don Wilton in the book. And I thought, of course, everybody will want to hear what his own pastor is saying.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to be pastor to Billy Graham, that's pretty incredible. And so we have a story from him also, which I think will have a big impact on people.
Very interesting. And it's true, because to me, you would think Billy Graham is the fastest of pastors, you know. It's like now he has a personal pastor for himself. So it's like really cool.
Yeah, I mean, you always wonder about that. You know, like you see like an Olympic runner, and you're thinking, who does he race against? You see the world, you know, number one tennis player in the world. Well, who does he play against?
Right.
Well, who preaches to Billy Graham? Of course, he gets to have a preacher, too. So this is a pretty amazing guy, this Don Wilton, who is his pastor.
Right, right. That was quite interesting. Billy Graham himself, of course, wrote the afterword to the book.
Yes,
what,
he did.
What his response has been like?
Well, we were really honored that he gave us an afterword to the book because he is suffering from age-related macular degeneration. So he wrote a little bit for us. He wrote a few paragraphs in December, and then he asked if we would reprint one of his absolute favorite sermons.
Mm-hmm.
It was one that he delivered in Central Park in New York City in 1991. He had 250,000 people there, showing once again that he is a big draw, even in New York City, where you wouldn't expect it. And so we reprinted that sermon since it was one of his favorites. And you know, I've heard that he's very happy with the book, very moved by all of these wonderful stories. I don't think he really understood how much people loved him and how much people admired him. And this is really the only kind of book that he's comfortable with as part of his legacy. He's not one to have, you know, a Steve Jobs type autobiography written about him or biography written about him. He's more comfortable having other people say these things because he is so self-effacing. So I know that he likes the book. I've been hearing about it, you know, and he's been through the whole book.
That's fantastic. What do you enjoy most about writing the book?
I loved making it obvious that he was such a humble man, and also I really liked how many people talked about his tolerance, and I really wanted to highlight that in the book. I just thought that to have one story after another about him being open-minded and tolerant was a very good message to send, especially these days when there are numerous evangelicals who are not open-minded and tolerant of people of other faiths or even of other branches of Christianity. So I really enjoyed making that point because maybe that will help to create a more open-minded group of people out there.
Right. Very true. What would you like for your readers to gain from reading Billy Graham and Me?
I think it's always inspirational to read about somebody who has done so much good and has served the public good for decades and still is so humble about it. And it's also really interesting to read how careful he was. He never touched money. He took a salary from the foundation. He never touched any money himself. He didn't ask for money. He didn't want to know about the money. He never got a bigger house. He still lives in the house where his family grew up. So he just never spent the money, never wanted to have anything to do with the money. He also made sure that he was never alone with a woman. So he was very careful about that so that no one could ever say that he had been alone with a woman and anything improper had occurred. It made it a little harder to get stories from women. For a while, we were saying, why aren't we getting more stories from women who have had personal experiences with Billy Graham? And then after a while, reading all of these stories about how careful he was to never be alone with a woman, I said, oh, now I know why we don't have stories from people who are alone, from women who were alone with him, because he wasn't alone with women.
Yeah.
And so, but he was really, really careful from the very early days before he even realized how famous he was going to be.
Yeah.
A very smart guy who really could think ahead.
Yeah.
So I think he provides inspiration to our readers in many different ways. But I think that, I guess the biggest lesson is that you can do a lot of good and remain humble, and you can still be tolerant of other people and forgiving of other people. I mean, there are just a number of very important lessons from this book, even for people who are not religious at all. It's still a very interesting book to read just because it is a historical document and a biography of somebody who has been incredibly important throughout modern American history.
Right. Some of the lessons that I got out of the book, for example, Kathy Ireland, summarized in three to four words here, basically, in a nutshell, live the message we speak. And that's how Kathy Ireland puts it best in terms of Billy Graham being a person of integrity and,
yes.
and have respect.
Right, and she is in a position where she's very famous. She's she has, you know, a big business going on. She's known as an author, an actress, an entrepreneur, a model, a designer. And so she has a really big business enterprise. And, yeah, he's a great role model for somebody who's in that position. She's making a lot of money. She's also a big opinion maker. Mm-hmm. Everybody could benefit from this lesson from Billy Graham about how to live your life and how to make your personal life the same as your public life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is, there's just one Billy Graham. The Billy Graham we see is the only one that there is.
Right. And then the other one that I truly like, lessons in terms of love, in Kathy Lee Gifford's concept about the wonderful loving relationship that Billy Graham had with his wife, Ruth. And one of the phrases that really touched me was, well, we continue to romance using our eyes with each other. I thought that was
yes.
very moving.
And then she wrote a song for
that's right.
for their 60th wedding anniversary called Our mm-hmm. Loving Eyes, and she actually recorded that song. She wrote
right.
it with Phil Silas.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I liked reading that story. And she actually happens to live in our town, so and
mm-hmm.
her kids went to school with my kids. So
oh,
that
okay.
meant that
yeah.
meant something to me to have a local person writing one of the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that also pervades the book, is Billy Graham's devotion to his wife. And when you look at the photos, what
yeah.
an attractive woman.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness,
yeah.
a beautiful, beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And he is a very handsome man.
Right.
And they have really good-looking children, and the girls actually look just like their mom. And he's constantly saying that one of the reasons that he is not afraid to die is because he wants to be reunited with his wife, Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's really lonely without her.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
they did have an incredible marriage. And she had to raise those kids alone a lot because he was
mm-hmm.
always on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very strong supporter of him. And even when the kids, you know, would have an accident, be in the hospital,
yeah.
she would say to him, don't come home. Go and do your work. I can take care of this. So they always say, you know, there's a strong woman behind every successful man, and she
right.
was a superb example of that.
Right. The uniqueness about it in the age where we talk a lot about love, are we talking about the spirit of the law and the letter of the law? In the end, when it's all said and done, the common theme in the entire book, it's about that unconditional love that truly connects you. You speak from the heart.
And I think in Billy Graham's case, it's very clear that first mm-hmm. and foremost, he was a husband and a father.
Mm-hmm.
And so the love he had for his wife and his children is pervasive in the book. And I think that all of us, no matter what kind of work we do, no matter how famous we might get, what really matters to us most is our families.
Right, right. Very true. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share?
Oh, yes, because we are in Mama's kitchen, aren't we? You know, I think it's hard for me to even think about what kind of person I was before I started this job 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I have learned a lot from all of the stories that our contributors have given us. And I think it's made me calmer, more forgiving, more open-minded, less stressed, even though I have an incredibly hard job that is actually very, very stressful. But
mm-hmm.
I think that what I've learned from reading tens of thousands of stories from all of our contributors is that nothing is really that bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always say it's not cancer. I mean, I'll give you an example. We were supposed to deliver all of the covers for our fall books
mm-hmm.
Yesterday to our distributor, Simon & Schuster, and
mm-hmm.
guess what? We didn't deliver 3 of our covers.
Oh, no.
And I should have been having fits, and, you know, I should have been so stressed out, and I just walked out of my office and said to my people, hey, it's not cancer. You know, you get some perspective when you're getting all these stories from people who've been through so much. And I think another
right.
thing that I've learned is that you should never take things personally,
mm-hmm.
and that helps me a lot. Hey, if you have a teenager and your teenager is rude to you, don't take it personally. It's not about you. You know, you go to a store and the cashier is slow or, not very nice to you. Again, it's not about you. Don't take it personally. They're just having a bad day. Mm-hmm. Another thing I've learned from our contributors is smile no matter how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. If you smile, you get smiles back, and it changes your day. So no matter how grumpy you feel, smile anyway. And so I've really learned a lot. My recipe for living has been to read all of these Chicken Soup for the Soul stories, make them part of my life experience, so that I have not only my own life experiences, but the life experiences of all of these other writers. And it really gives you a wonderful perspective and allows you to lead life in a more even manner, you know, without all of the ups and downs that you might have otherwise.
That's fantastic. Well, let's talk about where can people go to get the book as well as more information about it.
Well, as I said before, we priced the book very low for such a beautiful hardcover. So it's only $24.95, and if you've bought hardcover recently, you know that's a good price because many of them are $30, even $35, and they're not nearly as thick as ours, and they don't have 32 pages of glossy photographs and a fancy cover. So having said that, believe it or not, the book is available for under $14 through Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, which is incredible. What they do is when they have a super bestseller, they'll discount it heavily. And so we are privileged in that they're doing that for our book. The book is available at bookstores all over the nation. Walmart is carrying it in a big way. You're going to see it also at Target. So it's available everywhere that you would look for books. Also, the ebook is out. And so you can download the ebook. And the ebook does contain all of the beautiful design work that we have inside this book, as well as all of the photos. So it's available both ways, and there's also an audiobook coming. So you will be able to listen to the book in a few months when we have finished creating the audiobook. So that will be nice for people to listen to if they're going on a long drive or going out for a walk or something like that.
Fantastic. Well, Amy, thank you for all the wonderful information you've given us about the book, and thank you for the great recipes for living as well, and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Steve Gorham. He is the Executive Director of Climate Science Coalition of America. Steve and I will be discussing about his latest book, The Mad, Mad, Mad World of Climatism. It is an astonishing look at mankind and the climate change mania. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Amy, thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.